Well, joining us for his regular chat, and that's Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning, young man.
Afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, you're quite right, down. Good afternoon. Even though I put my clock back in time.
Yeah, you're back over in the country for a little bit. Good to have you back.
We have some business discussions to take place on other matters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll be reviewing some thoughts on programming going into the winter and the autumn. Sounds silly about that, but you've got to plan it ahead.
Exactly. Well, let's start, KB, with Leeds United. They're on a pre-season tour of Ireland. Had a win last night in the first proper game for Gary Monk last night, winning 2-1. I just wondered, it's obviously quite a traditional thing, Leeds United going over to Ireland. But I wondered over the clubs that you've been involved in your time, your pre-season memories. I'm sure there's been some interesting ones.
Oh, yes. I remember one of them was Hong Kong. But the really interesting one was in 2003 when Abramovich had just bought Chelsea. But one of the three, the Premier League were keen to obviously get the kind of reputation in the Far East, which it has now. And one of the ways was to promote an Asia Cup, which took part that year in Kuala Lumpur, the capital of Malaysia, and Newcastle, Birmingham, and Chelsea were the three English clubs. We played a round-robin tournament with the Malaysian national side, and we took out Chelsea TV and along with us to film everything and to report back. And one of the funniest things was walking through the street market in Kuala Lumpur. And suddenly I came across a stall full of football memorabilia, which was another name for fakes. And so I rummaged around and I found the Chelsea stuff. Now, what I couldn't believe, I found a Chelsea repro shirt on just a hanger, and it said, someone says fake. And by so I made friends with the owner and did an interview with him. He's my new best friend. And then rummaged around and I found a carefully packaged shirt, with the pins all careful up in plastic inside a box. And this was labelled genuine fake replica Chelsea shirt. So if you wanted just a fake Chelsea shirt, you got it hanging up in the wind, but a genuine fake Chelsea shirt, they package it for you. And this was so funny, and the guy couldn't see the funny side of it. And we were just cracked up. And Chelsea won on a penalty shootout. And since it was the first game or tournament that Abramovich owned the club, I was rather keen that we came back with the trophy. So all the clubs were staying at the same hotel. In fact, I came out of my street and I met Alan Shearer walking along. Just sort of took me wadge out. Alan, I said, I need this one for Mr. Abramovich. How much are you going to cost me? So we had a bit of laughing and ribbing, and nothing happened. Penalty shootout. Final. Chelsea versus Newcastle, and some young kid was in the Newcastle team, and he took the deciding penalty and scarred it well over the top. Poor kid. I felt so sorry for him generally, because he wanted the ground to open up and him to fall into it and dissolve. Anyway, I consoled him afterwards. And I was walking along, and comes Alan Shearer and says, "Hey chairman, where's me cut?" So I looked at him, Ralph, and he said, "You're not going to bloody Welsh on me, are you?" So it was that kind of atmosphere. Really funny and great, but Kuala Lumpur is far more interesting than, say, Bangkok, which we went on to later on the Orient Express. Ireland, one player, unsigned, tall centre forward, came across with his boots. That's all he had, didn't he, have over that bag. And we played him in one game and signed him on the spot. And he was so successful and famous for the life of me, I can't remember his damn name. But that's what happens. But it's always interesting. Some people make a great fuss of you, and some people you almost left to your own devices, and it's most peculiar. I think the funniest one was organised by Neil Warnock. And we always finished up with a game down in the West Country, whichever club he was at. And of course, that was Warnock's own country. He was God down there. So taking whichever club he managed at the time down there was a given and a must. It's interesting how you discover the advantage of a pre-season tour. Obviously, everybody gets to know each other, particularly the new players. But also gives you a chance to blood your kids, which is also very important. It's amazing the ones you put on, always on spec, on trial, and you find you've unearthed a bit of gold dust where you least expected it. And that's all the bonus. And of course, it keeps the overseas fans happy. And also gives the Leeds fans a good time to visit the old sod. And in my days when I lived in Ireland, Shelburne was like the capital, was like the Arsenal of Ireland. Used to win everything, then they sold the ground for development. Look on what's happened now. But there you are. Shelburne boys had a good game. It was nice to get a win under your belt. He was silly friendly.
Yeah, exactly.
It was winning a habit, like losing.
It's obviously a busy time of year on and off the pitch, and off the pitch, Leeds United have been doing quite a bit of business, really. And one player that's gone from Elland Road is Lewis Cook, who got sold to Bournemouth for a deal apparently worth up to £10 million. I was just wondering, because obviously this seems to be an ongoing thing with Leeds United, and certainly in recent years, where you know a certain amount of the players have left Elland Road, not seeing a future. He's gone on to a Premier League club, and I'm just wondering how hard is it to sign what are, from a fan's point of view and from pundit's point of view, probably one of your best players?
Well, it is hard, and it also is difficult. Unless you're hard up, you don't need the money, or you desperately need the money. It's always a battle, but it's players, chairman, managers often get blamed for things which are beyond their control, and which sometimes don't always appear to be in the best interest of the club. But I'll give you one particular example of the quandary that you're faced with if a big club comes in for, a bigger club comes in for your players. But the particular concern was Fabian Delph. Now, he was a young kid, came up through the ranks, and he was obviously going to be an exceptional player. But we had a problem. And the problem was the agent came to see us. Now, a lot of agents are nasty and grabby. But there are agents who are good, careful, and thoughtful. And Fab's agent came to me. I can't remember which year it was now. And he said, "Jeremy, can we have a meeting?" So we had a meeting. And he said, "We've got a problem." He said, "What's that?" He said, "Well, look, Fab's desperate for Premiership football. And he's clearly not going to get it next season. Now, I would ask you to sell him. Sell him." I said, "We work together, get the best price for him, but also we get the best club for him." And we talked about it. I think we had lunch in Walter for 2 hours. And the quandary is, you want to make your club great, but is it fair to stand in the way of an outstanding young player who has an opportunity to play in the Premiership? So, reluctantly, we agreed to do so. And Manchester City wanted him. But they'd already stolen two of our youngsters, so they weren't in our good books anyway. And they shitted it, because of their Arabs, they shitted and shouted and shouted and shitted. Meanwhile, Martin O'Neill came in from Aston Villa. And it's just the agent. The agent himself thought that Villa, with Martin O'Neill as manager, would be a much better home than all the mysteries that were going on at Aston Villa, at Man City. Till he couldn't see, they couldn't keep their word. And they'd already stolen two of our players. So we ultimately, which they offered silly money for. And in compensation. So finally, I agreed how we do it with the agent. Put an ultimatum to Man City. This is how much we wanted. They'd have to pay for the two youngsters they stole as well. Then in the meantime, we went to Aston Villa. And they agreed a deal. Martin O'Neill said, look, to sanction that kind of money, I'll have to get the owner. But we're playing a pre-season tour in Spain. Funny, pre-season tour in Spain. And I'm flying down there on the Friday, be back on the Monday to give you the answer. And he, as good as he were, he flew on the Friday, got the agreement, on the spot, face-to-face with the owner, came back, said, done the deal. So we sold him to Aston Villa. And so he then came on, moaning and groaning, and I said, no, you had your chance, you buggered us about. Villa an honourable club, honourable team, and they've done an honourable deal. So Fab went there, as you know, and became an England international, had a very successful career. And now, of course, he finished up at where? Funny old game.
Yeah.
The other one was Max Gradle. Now there was another one, great player. He worked with him. But the trouble is he had a chance. His agent came to him and said, look, Max, of course, is French and he's missing his family or whatever. He'll use your guff. But he's got a chance away, not in the French First League. He's got a chance of playing in the Champions League. At the moment, that time St. Etienne were in qualifying position, they were looking to strengthen their team for next season. So we very reluctantly agreed to sign. You know, French kid, not only playing for his national team, also going to play in the European Championship. You couldn't fair to stand in his way, so we let him go. Now, Johnny Howson is a different story. And, example, if you remember, he was playing for us, and he was the captain of the team. But he would not sign a new contract. And I remember talking to him at Thorpe Park, and he just avoided the subject all the time. Now, we had a problem with John, because we checked on his birth certificate, and he was 25 years of age, I think, in the first week of June. Now, the trouble is, when you get to 25, you're a free agent, and you no longer, up to the age of 24, if you walk out, then you get compensation, which is settled by a FA or Football League or Premier League tribunal. So the club gets some money. From 25, he goes for nothing. Anyway, it's December, if you remember, and I think we were playing Millwall. And John went for one ball, because he was chasing it, because he was an attacking midfielder. Went to one ball, for one ball, in the penalty area, and fell over and ripped his ankle. He was out. Wasn't a foul, nobody's near him. That's one of the bloody unlucky things. It'd been raining, pitch was wet. Twisted his ankle. He was out. Seriously out. And Norwich, and he couldn't play. In fact, he was estimated to be out for 3 months. So, well, bugger it, 3 months. That's March, April, May. Transfer comes up. End of contract, June. He's 25. Get nothing, that won't get a penny fine. And then all of a sudden, Norwich out of the blue came in. They were running for promotion. We weren't. Came in and bought him. We said, to be fair, we said, well, yeah, you got an anchor up for 3 months. Thank you, woman. So after a bit of haggling, he got £1.8 million on him, which was nothing. But his £1.8 million, than if we'd have waited 6 months and got nothing. So sometimes there are reasons why players go, which you can't announce to the public. And then you just take the sticks and stones thrown at you and suffer in silence. So every transfer of every player is a different one. I mean, Beckford was another one. He had a... Oh, he didn't have the same kind of agent as Fabian Delphine, to put it that way. And he also had a very ambitious wag girlfriend. And he was 26, 27... Wouldn't sign a contract. Just wouldn't sign a contract. Not at all. Agent had it all lined up. He signed for everything on a free transfer. I think he was on... I think they immediately gave him $2.5 million a week, which was about... I think he got $500,000 up front. I think said to the agent. And yet, Beck's changed after that. Suddenly, from being a windows fitter, windscreen fitter, he became a millionaire. And unfortunately, his attitude changed with it. So much so, if you remember, they paid him to go to Leicester. They transferred him to, I think it was Leicester. They paid him so much to go. Just went off the books and out of the way. And now, he's lost his way. He's now playing Preston. So you can never tell about selling players. Because the idea, you don't sell your best players, they'll never get promotion. But against that, you have players, some of them go on strike if you won't transfer them. Sometimes a bad manager turns them against the club. You don't know what happens in the dressing room. So it's always a myth. But I'm sorry we lost him. And of course we lost Sam Byron, who I thought was going to be our next captain. Without another detail. And funny enough, Sam hasn't played very much for West Ham in last season after he left. Probably had an injury or something. But no, that was a disappointment too. There are, things move on. And I gather we're signing new youngsters all the time. So hopefully the conveyor belt is back on course. But unfortunately the kids aren't being looked after by Lucy Ward anymore, which is unfortunate. Both the fact that she left and the manner which she was treated after she left. But, draw a line.
Yeah, and
the one in the future.
And talking of moving on, KB, Roy Hodgson is now obviously a memory as England head coach. And
bad one.
Well, yeah, but very bad memory. But it looks like there's a couple of favourites at the moment. One being Sam Allardyce, which Sunderland aren't very happy with. Jurgen Klinsmann's another name that seems to be banded around at the moment. But certainly all the headlines and all the talk is of Sam Allardyce being the next England manager.
Well, Sam is a very unusual man. I won't say I know him well, but I know him. But no, Sam did a good, he steadied a sinking ship and did well. And he's got this ability to talk to players bluntly without upsetting them and without upsetting their self-confidence, which is important. But I think what's bad is that England are taking so much time to make their mind up, it's not fair on Sunderland. I mean, if they do lose, Sam, they've got to find a replacement. And clubs are already in pre-season training or pre-season tours. So whoever's going to come in will have to come in, not know any of the players, and start from scratch, which is what normally you do that at the end of the season throughout the summer. this isn't the first time that the FA have paid badly like that. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story about it, going off the point a bit, but it's quite ironic. We had Glenn Hoddle as our manager at Chelsea, and he didn't pull up any roots. In fact, after 6 months into our first season with him as manager, we were bottom of the league, and Glenn was full of, you just keep playing football and this and that and the other. And Dennis Wise, we were at Southampton losing 1-0, I think, Saturday before Christmas. And Dennis Wise said, to hell with that, and started shouting and bawling, heck, play football, let's go and kick somebody, let's get the bloody ball and get in the net. He carried on ranting, he was the captain. And in effect, this sort of dressing room revolt against Glenn's attitude. They would say, yeah, it's going to do them. Anyway, they won 2-1, I think 2-1 that day. And then they won 3-1, and then they won 4-1. I think 4-1 was at Queen's Park Rangers. And we were out the bottom three and in the bottom third, which is fairly comfortable. And Glenn Hoddle hardly spoke to Wisey after that. And when he became England manager, which I'm about to get onto, England manager, he never picked Wisey for England again. Anyway, what happened was, I was sitting in the Chelsea Harbour Hotel having breakfast with Glenn Hoddle's agent. Nice guy. Lived near Bournemouth. Name escapes me now, but he was an honourable man. And we took 2 hours negotiating. And we agreed it and shook hands. So I said, so Glenn will come in and sign tomorrow. I want to announce it to the press. Yes, he said. Now, I'd gone through that all in good spirits and good faith. But I knew the Hoddle had been talking to the FA, Graham Kelly, the General Secretary, Chief Executive, since February about the England job. And I knew all about it because it had been reported back to me all the time. So I didn't say anything, it's been long with the charade. But what happened, you see, is that Kelly, the FA, had approached Hoddle without Chelsea's knowledge or permission, totally behind their back. Now, in those days, it's a bit different today, but in those days, there were very, very strict rules about legal approaches. If you made a legal approach to a player, you got punished very, very severely. The rules have changed since then, in some respects. So when Kelly rang me at 2 o'clock that afternoon, out of the blue, he asked if he had permission to speak to Glenn Hoddle. I said, well, Graham, you left it a bit late, asking me. He said, how do you mean, Ken? I said, you've been talking to him since February, haven't you? I said, now, can you give me a bit of advice? He said, yeah, what is it, Ken? Anything? I said, well, who do I report the FA to for breaking an FA rule on a legal approach? And then burst out laughing. It wasn't a nice laugh, it was a nasty laugh. There was an embarrassed cough at the other end. And he said, well, apart from that, okay. I said, yeah, you can take it, good luck, good riddance. So 2:30 or 3 o'clock, I got a phone call. An old phone call from Glenn Hoddle, typical of the man, resigning over the phone. A bit like Phil Collins sending his wife a fax asking for a divorce. And as I said to Glenn, I know all about it, Glenn. By the way, we've agreed the contract with you, Dennis Roach, that was his name, your agent, Dennis. I'm having a press conference tomorrow to announce you're signing a new 3-year contract at Chelsea. And there was a silence the other night, burst out laughing. good luck and good riddance. So there are many things. I always say football and football club are like an iceberg. The bit on the top is all the public see or read about. What goes on behind the scenes Saturday night to the following Saturday morning is far more interesting and far more influential on the way the club is run, which eventually filters onto the pitch on a Saturday afternoon. So I've rambled a bit, but I think the point I've made is it's not as easy as fans will think it is, buying it all, take the money, run, take the money, run. Because Massimo's put quite a few bob into Leeds, and he'd done it without any help from GFH, who've been absolutely despicable in their behaviour. As you know, their behaviour towards me and David Haye and many other people as well. Breaking contracts, suing, not paying up, even when things have been ordered against them. And I understand, in fact, that because GFH won't support Leeds United, they just want to manipulate the share price to fiddle their balance sheet, that there will be a shareholders' meeting shortly to get rid of the Patels off of the board. And that will put Leeds standing much better in the international world and in the Arab world, because in the Arab world they all know what GFH is like. And then if you have an Italian who, although he's under attack from the usual idiot fringe, generally does want the club to do well. So I think he's in holiday now in Cagliari. Let's hope he come back to a better club. Undisturbed, where everything's settled down and working together for the new season.
Well, talking of things new, KB, new Prime Minister installed. She's been sorting out her cabinet today. Theresa May, if we get your thoughts on the all change at Westminster.
Well, it's been revolution rather than evolution, hasn't it? Things have changed so much and so quickly. You have a situation now where you've got Theresa May, who's been a very quiet, determined, but perhaps underestimated woman. I think we might have her. She's Thatcher the Second there quietly. She's certainly wasted her time in sweeping out the old gang, and that includes former Chancellor Osborne, in my opinion, been a total disaster. There was so little. Lied terribly in the referendum campaign and got his marching orders left by the back door yesterday, I gather. A cloak and dagger, knife stabbing and all that sort of quite funny, actually. Like War of Thrones. But I think I haven't seen, I've been flying today, so obviously I haven't seen all the announcements today to complete a cabinet. Look it up on TV afterwards. But I think they've got a chance, and they've got a great chance because of the mess that Labour's in. And I can't believe it. Talking about going down with the ship. Corbyn, he's determined to take the ship down with him. You've got a silly situation now where he won't resign, where the unions are voting and campaigning for him to stay on as leader permanently. And you've got violence now with anti-Corbynistas being threatened with violence, and in some cases even worse. And they're in a total mess. And the joke about it is that a low Labour Party and the unions, by and large, wanted everyone to stay in Europe. It's the so-called working classes who voted out. Whoever thought that Newcastle, Darlington, Hartlepool and Sunderland all vote out, but they did. Which seems to me that when the next general election takes place, which may or may not be before 2020, I think Labour will take a wipeout. Lib Dems have been wiped out. Labour in total disarray. So if he gets to be elected as leader through the membership, then you have a situation whereby he'll either be leading a party with nobody behind him, or there could be a breakaway party formed as the old Liberal, as is now the old Lib Dems, when the Liberals amalgamated with the Social Democrats, when they broke away from the Labour Party. They were forced for a little while. And now, on top of that, you've got the cheeky Scott saying, well, hang on, we should be the official opposition. Which, of course, and I heard rumours, they did, in fact, sound out the Speaker, Bersko, on the possibility of the constitutional position as well. They could and should claim to be the official opposition. So it's a mess. Meanwhile, everybody's suffering a bit if they go on the holiday this year. It might be a good idea to stay at home with the euro, with the pound dropped against the euro so much. But against that, share prices have surged. The stock exchange is higher now than it's been for some time. Lost originally on the run-up to the referendum, but it's now made it up and more, which suggests that people believe in the strength of the UK economy. And we may have a few hiccups on the way, but I think it's right that we did leave. As I said before, I lived in Monaco, so I didn't vote. So I didn't think it was right. Non-residents should have the vote. But I was in favour of Brexit. I think it was the right decision. I think it's time for all entrepreneurs and businessmen, companies, company chairmen and leaders, industry, and the service industry to get together and take them on. After all, we are the best country in the world. Have been for years. It has been badly run. Now let's make sure it's properly run. The Europeans sell far more trust than we buy off them. So they're going to mess about with the free market. Well, cut off their nose to spite their face. But at least we'll have our farming industry back and our fishing industry back. Maybe it's not too late to save the steel industry. We can slap some nice big tariffs on the Chinese. Stop them dumping their steel on us. And also we won't have that levy that you put on gas, electricity, which makes energy costs so high for our industry. It's not all bad. Look behind. Listen to I urge all listeners to, or readers if you're on the internet, is to look behind the headlines, try and see the facts. And maybe there's plenty of jobs out there. Maybe the unemployed, some of them, particularly those who haven't done too much work in their life, go and get a job. Improve productivity. Help stop immigration. There's a thought.
Okay, B, as ever, always a pleasure, and we'll catch up with you at the same time next week.
Thank you very much. Ciao, bye.